Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in for Kerry Miller. What a whirlwind. President Trump is off on his 11-day trip to Asia with North Korea and trade top of the agenda. We have a new chair of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell. The House unveiled its tax cut proposal. In many respects, the House proposal marks a significant shift from current tax policy, especially on the corporate side. Special Counsel Robert Mueller has filed his first charges connected to his probe into Russia's influence on the 2016 election. Mueller's net is widening. The AP reports that former Minnesota congressman and Republican super lobbyist Vin Weber is under investigation. And those are just a few of the highlights. Now, before we bring in the political junkie, Ken Rudin, into the discussion, we want to hear your questions. So call us at 651-227-6000, toll-free 800-242-2828, and online, you can tweet at C. Farrell Econ. That's at C-F-A-R-R-E-L-L Econ. All right, let's bring in the political junkie to see what he has to say. Ken, you're joining us from D.C. today?
Yes, I am, Chris, and good morning.
Good morning to you. So let's, I want to shift to a very tragic topic, and we'd like to get your reaction to it. You know, we had the attack, the First Baptist Church in Sullivan Springs. Many people died. This follows right in the on the attack that we had in New York City. Do you see anything coming out in the discussion in Washington, D.C. about gun control or legislation? What do you see happening in reaction to this, if anything?
Well, Chris, I mean, sadly, that's probably an easy question to answer because if we weren't having new gun laws after the slaughter of second grade children in Newtown, Connecticut, and we weren't having new gun laws after the slaughter of parishioners in a church in Charleston, South Carolina, and given all the other San Bernardino and Orlando and all the other tragedies involving guns over the past year or couple of years. Nobody's talking about changing the gun laws in Washington, and President Trump, you know, who's in Asia on a 12-day tour,
well,
not 11
right.
day. They added another day to this.
That's
they added
right.
another day to the schedule. But he said, "Look, it's not about guns; it's about mental health issues. And as long as our leaders keep talking about this as mental health issues, I don't see anything getting changed. Certainly not about limiting the access to guns."
So, same conversation, same debate. No progress.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, let me add one more thing. Our thoughts and prayers.
Yes, absolutely.
Look, these 26 people were in church, for goodness sakes. If they didn't have thoughts and prayers, they were praying as they were being mowed down. So somehow the thoughts and prayers seem to be very empty, especially empty given what happened in Texas.
So now I want to shift to what is a big topic in Washington, D.C., the House tax proposal. I mean, and, you know, they rolled it out last week and the weekend's now behind us. And, you know, people are starting to have a chance really to look at the details of the bill. They're poring over it. How do you think this rollout is faring?
Well, of course, it depends on who you ask. And it depends on what state you're asking, because it seems like if you're a taxpayer in a low tax state, mostly run by Republicans, Republican governors and Republican state legislatures, I think the middle class does pretty well. They do get, you know, they do get a tax break, as President Trump and the Republicans say. It's good for the middle class. But if you're in high tax states like New York, New Jersey, California, where property taxes are often written off, or state and local taxes are written off as deductions, when you lose those deductions, that it really hurts the middle class. And of course, you do have a handful, perhaps, well, actually more than a handful. If you may have as many as 20 Republicans whose careers theoretically could be in jeopardy in 2018 in New York, New Jersey, and California, if this tax bill, if this tax plan goes forward, and these taxpayers back home realize their bill is going up. So some Republicans are very squeamish about this. Other Republicans, of course, are very happy. They say it ends the inheritance, the estate tax, which helps the wealthy. And, of course, corporations, you know, they would go from 35% tax rate to 20% tax rate. So businesses like that, too. But again, not everybody's on board, and there are some Republicans, of course, the Democrats are mostly against it. There are some Republicans who are still very nervous about this, how it could affect their future, political future in 2018.
So I'm curious how this is going to play out politically. The Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg both had an analysis, and Megan McArdle, the libertarian columnist, has this phrase, the weaponizing of the tax code, because one of the things that's really striking is the way taxes are going to be treated. If you're an executive or you're an accountant, you're a lawyer, you're going to be paying the highest rate. But if you have a pass-through business and you're manufacturing widgets, you're going to have a much lower rate. And so part of this tax code seems to be saying, well, we like certain kinds of occupations and we don't like other kinds of occupations, and we're going to tax them at a different rate. I mean, is this going to be able to, are they going to be able to hold on to this?
Well, see, that's exactly it. And plus the fact what we're not mentioning is that whatever, of course, tax plans always have to originate in the House. I mean, that's by law. But of course, the Senate, for it to pass the Senate, you need 60 votes, especially if it's going to add to the deficit, and it will add to the deficit. But you're right. I mean, it, not only does it affect people in different states differently, it affects people in different occupations differently. And it's just, you know, when the last time the tax plan was rejiggered like this was 1986. So you're talking about 30 years ago. And it took a long time. It took over 11 months for them to put together a bill because there was a lot of complications and deductions and business interests and lobbying efforts that were fighting across services against each other. Here, it seems like they're writing the bill in early November. They want it on President Trump's desk by Christmas. That is a tough task, again, especially when there are so many contradictions and uncertainties in the bill.
So here's my reaction to the bill. I'd like to know what your reaction was. My reaction to the bill was, this is why they should have gone for tax reform. I mean, really gone for broadening, simplification, get rid of as many deductions and credit as possible. But they ended up with this kind of strange halfway house where you kind of limit the mortgage interest deduction, but not by that much. You're kind of limit the state and local government deduction, but not by completely. I mean, it seems like they ended up in the worst world.
Medical deductions?
Exactly.
Right, so, medical deductions too, right.
Right. So wouldn't they have done better just to say, let's really change this tax reform thing so it is just simplified?
Well, something, there have been many candidates, presidential candidates. We think of Herman Cain with his 999. I mean, there were a lot of presidential candidates over the years, and Steve Forbes, who basically wanted to simplify the tax code. But ultimately, there's still many Democrats who feel that whatever concoction that the Congresses have come up with in the past, it always seemed to favor the rich at the expense of the middle class. And so while it's easy to say that it should be simple, and maybe that is ultimately the goal, eventually when you looked at the wording and the fine print, a lot of it just seemed to just favor one class over the other.
And so I have to, before we leave taxes, I just have to ask you, whatever happened to the debt, the budget, the concerns about fiscal responsibility? I mean, for 8 years, we've heard about this.
That's a great
and
question.
Then all of a sudden, it doesn't matter.
See, Chris, this is a very important question because when the Senate came up with this plan, first of all, when the Senate passed its budget, it showed that it increased the deficit $1.5 trillion over 10 years. And there were a lot of deficit hawks in the House that said, wait a second, we're not going along with this. We were elected on fiscal responsible policy. We're not going to go along with this increasing the deficit. But then Mitch McConnell and the president said, no, you should back the Senate plan because we need to go to the voters in 2018 and say we've accomplished something. And even if it may not be the perfect thing for our particular ideology, it at least show that we could do something. So a lot of Republicans bit their tongue and just went along with this. But a lot of them, this is a complete anathema to what they've been arguing about so many years, and that is to lower the deficit. So a lot of hypocrisy, a lot of broken promises in this bill, if it does get passed.
So what questions do you have for Ken on taxes, Federal Reserve policy, foreign trade with President Trump visiting Japan, South Korea, China, Vietnam, the Philippines? Call us at 651-227-6000, toll free at 800-242-2828. And you can also tweet me at C. Farrell Econ. That's C. Farrell Econ. All right, let's stick with the economy.
Chris, could I just...
Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to say one more thing. When you added that litany of topics to talk about, I think that even though it's not affecting the country because it's only in limited jurisdictions, tomorrow's elections, especially the governorship of Virginia, is a big one because you have Democrats who don't seem to know. I mean, this is a perfect example, perfect opportunity for Democrats to keep control of the governorship. The economy is in a good place. Trump is very unpopular in Virginia. It was the only southern state he lost in 2016. And yet you have a chance of the Republican, Ed Gillespie, winning the election because Ed Gillespie, once upon a time, a mild-mannered George W. Bush kind of Republican who headed up the RNC, is now running ads attacking sanctuary cities and supporting Confederate monuments and saying nice things about Trump. And win or lose, what Ed Gillespie is doing in Virginia may be the boilerplate for what Republicans do in 2018, and that is, as we learn with Jeff Flake and Bob Corker, maybe the answer is not running away with Donald or away from Donald Trump and maybe embracing him. And if that's the case and it proves to be a winning strategy in Virginia, that'll tell us a lot about what may happen in 2018. That was, by the way, Chris, that was all one sentence. I just want to point out.
Yes, it was. Absolutely. And that was a very good sentence. It was very coherent.
The longest sentence in history. Yeah.
So, I mean, that then suggests, I mean, the dynamic of 2018, if you're right, depending on the outcome of the election, of course, but that dynamic suggests that the 2018 election is going to be incredibly ugly. I mean, mind-boggling
well,
ugly.
That's a gutsy prediction, Chris, because of course it will. Because remember, we're still fighting the 2016 election with every time something goes on, every time.
Well, we're still
Robert
fighting
Mueller
the Civil War, too. I have to throw that in there.
Well, that actually, very good point on that. We are still fighting the Civil War, but we're certainly fighting the 2016 election, not only with Donald Trump attacking Hillary Clinton, and every time something is mentioned about Robert Mueller and Russia intervention and collusion, he said, well, Hillary should be in jail. But now we have the Democrats eating their own as well with this new Donna Brazile book that's come out. And that basically says that Hillary, you know, they put the thumbs on the scale for Hillary Clinton, that it was rigged in her favor. And then at one point, Donna Brazile says that Hillary Clinton's health was so precarious that they were talking about replacing her as the nominee with Joe Biden. I mean, the last thing Democrats want to talk about right now is these internal divisions between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders' wings of the party, and they want to focus on Trump, but not when you have this kind of distraction. And of course, the guy in the White House loves these kind of distractions.
Right. And then it becomes harder and harder. So what is the alternative policy proposals that are being made? So next, let's go
to
Michael in St. Louis Park. And Michael, I believe you have a question about policy issues.
Yes, I read an article on the front page of yesterday's Star Tribune that said something about buried in this tax bill are things, provisions regarding abortion, regarding immigrants being able to file for credits, refundable credits, regarding a political speech from the pulpit. What is anybody paying any attention to this other than, the news media, which apparently, I'm seeing a little bit about it, but I haven't heard anything about it up until seeing this in the paper yesterday.
Ken?
Well, that's, I mean, Michael, if you're correct, and I have not seen that article, and you said it's buried in the weeds of the bill, I am not aware of it. I'm not saying it's not true, but that's exactly why we need we need the media to just say what is in this bill, because if there are a lot of social issues tucked in, like abortion, like the poor and what they would benefit from or get hurt by, it's certainly not going to be the proponents of the bill who's going to announce this stuff. So, again, I mean, look, you know, they're talking about passing the bill by Thanksgiving and putting on the president's desk by Christmas. And, of course, I know you're not allowed to say the word Christmas anymore, but even if I – but the point is that
– You can say it.
It's the
role
of the media. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, Kerry lets me say whatever I want.
So I was just going to say, I'm not going to interfere with this.
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, she lets me do whatever I want. So anyway, but anyway, Michael's making a very good point. These are things that we need, we, the American public, and the Congress needs to know what's in it before there's any kind of vote.
Well, Ken, as always, you get the last word. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Chris.